getting up and they, you know, when they're about to say, not quite sure, you know, they're still kind of getting their guts up, so they say, Potchim b'farach sanya, and you're like, what is that? Potchim, we open. Bichvod, bikavod, in respect to achsanya. The achsanya is a word that means like an inn or the host. So poschim bichvod achsanya means we start out when we speak by thanking the host. So my poschim bichvod achsanya is to thank the Pavlovs for having just created and nurtured this amazing place called Shaarim. That's why posting bichvod achsanya, and you know, just in general, if you're speaking someplace, whoever the host or the hostess are, if you're having a dvar Torah with a bunch of women together in your apartment, you can thank each other. It's a concept in Chazal. The idea here we have it. So we don't even have to, the idea of Jews and gratitude and admitting that we don't know everything is such a fundamental part of what it means to a Jew. So before I stand up in public and say something amazing that's going to just like blow everybody away and I'm just going to say, wow, what a great idea, the first thing I'm doing is that I'm saying, I'm thanking somebody else. It's not really me. Right? Okay, so this is like before I start. It's not even on the before you start part of before you start. That's number one. And number two, and we'll kind of talk about this when we talk about content. There's a big difference between I think and I think and I think and I think and I think. Many years ago, my husband and I had the, I wouldn't say it's a pleasure or a displeasure, whatever, an interesting experience of having been at several Shevet Brachas and such things where people would say some things like this. The Rambam says this, the Ramban says that, the Orach Chaim says this, the Kli Yakar says that, but I think, that's what pushed us over the edge to become fanatic Haredim, actually. Like, no. No. There's something very beautiful in sharing your own Torah thoughts, and at the same time we want to make sure that we give credit to where we got, and we'll talk about, you know, finding the balance between saying, so I saw in this thing that it says here and I saw in that thing, okay, we'll get to that, but let's get to our sheets before you start. Here we go. So we're before you start. So thing number one is to know your audience. To whom are you speaking? There's no such thing as a Dvar Torah that's like, well, maybe there is such a thing as a Dvar Torah that's good for everybody, but whom you're speaking to. Oh, hark. To whom you're speaking, got that English grammar correct. That would be so proud of me.
Okay, sorry, thank you.
No. So to whom you're speaking is important. So what does it mean to know your audience? One of the things is to check your assumptions about previous knowledge base, right? And I know that this is sometimes an issue with, you know, here and when other things, and I imagine that you've been places where people will say, blah, 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 and you have no idea what that means. And so we see from that! Okay, so the level of knowledge and the level of religiosity is going to matter. The number of things that you say in translation or not, the kind of language you use, whether or not you say third meal or shalashuddis, you know, like all of these things. In other words, you want you want your audience to feel as comfortable with you as you hopefully feel with them. Now, one way to fill in, I think maybe I'm saying that later. Okay, whatever, I'll say it now anyway. One way to fill in, it's like, let's, you know, have an audience. I don't really know exactly the audience. It's a mixed audience. Or I know that among the audience, there are some people who have more background and some people who have less background. And I have this really great idea that I thought and I developed and I showed it to Mrs. Tarko and she said, that's amazing. And you could also add this and you polished it up and you're all excited. But you also know that there's some people in the audience, your friends brought a friend who brought a friend, who are going to be like totally lost. And this Dvar Torah is so perfect for her. So for those of you who are ignoramuses and don't know this, you know, that's not so effective, right? Okay, but on the other hand, if the majority of the people in the room know this already, it's a little bit insulting to say, the Jewish people were enslaved by the evil King Paro. And this is like, you know. So the thing to do is you say, some of you are probably familiar with this, I'm just going to give a quick rehab, you know, something like that, and you fill in the most important information that's necessary so that everybody in the room, the people who know what you're talking about, won't feel insulted or bored. And the people who don't know what you're talking about will get enough information so they can kind of follow what you're talking about. And they can always come over afterwards and say, who was Xerxes the 14th? You know, it's like, whatever it is, it's like, I don't know. Anybody can say King Tut's name in full, you know, gets a cup of tea. Okay. Okay. So under knowing your audience, there I have two things. Check your presumptions about knowledge base and level of religiosity. Make sure that you know to whom you're speaking and that you will fill in a respectful manner on both ends. You're probably not going to like fall into this too much. When I used to teach people who are doing training for Kiruv, I'd say like all of these, you know, Mirza Shembli Neder of things, you know, cause, you know, they're like, you know, people don't know what you're talking about all the time. On the one hand, on the other hand, if you have an audience that's used to saying that, so you know, so you can either like say it and translate it really, really quickly, or just kind of not say it too much. Whatever, you have to balance. The question is to be cognizant of to whom you're speaking. And the second thing under know your audience is, find out what they were promised. How many of you have gone to a shiur that you thought was going to be about one thing and it was about another, and no matter how good it was, you couldn't really hear it? Like, has this ever happened to you, right? Like, you don't, like, bait and switch isn't nice, right? So, even if it's unintentional, make sure you know what it is that your audience thinks they're getting. Now, when we're talking about the Dvar Torah on the Parsha, in the dorm, for Shalosh Shudis, third meal, right? Mm. So, like, this isn't such a major issue, but it could be as you all develop into Talmidot Chachamot, and you're out there sharing the words of Torah with all of the Klal Yisrael. So it might happen. It's like, we have this amazing speaker! And it's like one of you guys, right? Just make sure you know what it is they think that they're getting, right? Okay, and if you have an agenda, like even if you want to sneak it in there, you have to make sure that you're giving them what they expect, because c'est le faire otherwise. Okay, and again, no matter how wonderful what you're saying is, you lose your audience if they feel fooled, right? And I would say your average Jewish woman to whom you may be speaking is an intelligent enough woman to like be able to have this. So in other words, don't, you know, yeah, okay, fine. Okay, number two in the before you start is the technical stuff. Again, a lot of this is not necessarily going to apply when you're giving a Dvar Torah at a, you know, at a Shalosh Shudis, at a Shabbos Kala, but in other situations it will. Check your time frame, check the place. What props may you need or not need in order to, you know, like how delicious the food that's going to come wafting in as you're teaching going to be, and you know, like know the technical setup. There are some kinds of divrei Torah where people have to be super super focused on what you're saying. It's built very tightly, and you say A B C D E F G H I J K, and if the physical area is something that there's a lot of distractions, that kind of Dvar Torah is not going to work. Right, so you're going to have a Dvar Torah where you make a point and then you tell three stories and then you reiterate the point and then you're finished, which is also good. That's fine. But you have to know where you are and how that's going to work. Like you're in a classroom, people can pay attention, there's not too many distractions, you know, whatever it is. Or you're in a place where, you know, the kids are running back and forth, so you're not going to quote Maharals and Rav Dessler's, you know, like, right, talk about, you know, like deep Kabbalistic ideas when somebody's kid is saying, Eva, I want a cookie in the middle. That's not going to work. Okay. Okay, number three is choosing a topic. So you think, like, you know, what's the big deal? I'm giving you the Dvar Torah on the Parsha at the Shabbos Kala this week. But number one, what is expected? Like, what kind of Dvar Torah does your audience want at the Shabbos Kala? So something for that is going to be, you have to say a nice thing about the Parsha, that people are familiar enough with the connection from the Parsha to the point you want to make, right? And so you want to say something about the Parsha without saying, this is everything that happens in this week's Parsha. Da, 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 da. So you want to like reiterate something that happens in the Parsha. You want to make a point about it. You want to illustrate it. And because it's a Shabbos Kala, you want to connect it to marriage or the Kala or Sharim and marriage and the Kala or the marriage of Sharim and the Kala. right? Right. And then that's what they're expecting at its Dvar Torah, and they don't want it to be very long. Right? So even though you have a really great idea and you spent 4 hours working on it, you better not spend 4 hours saying it, or even an hour. Sure, sure, sure. Right? So make sure you know what they're expecting. Okay. Do not download anything and read it, because they also could have seen H.com. Just like you, so did they. Okay? Now, there's nothing wrong with secondary and tertiary sources such as H.com to give you ideas. But if you, you know, cut and paste the whole thing, so, you know, you're... Well, it's plagiarism if you don't say. You could say, look, you're sitting around at lunchtime, and you say, and instead of being on your digital things, you're sitting around at lunchtime and listen to this, talking to each other. Shocking. Okay. And, sorry, I tried to throw that in. And someone says, I saw this beautiful Dvar Torah on H.com, and then you say it over. That's fine. That's fine. Okay, but now when you're like, okay, now the Dvar Torah for this Shalosh Shudas is going to be what I already saw in Eshkot. So that's that. You would be shocked to hear me saying this because it's not really like me, but you have to be enthusiastic about what you're teaching, like what you're saying, what it means. Like people know if you're faking it. You can't fake it. You have to love. You have to be excited about the idea. This isn't hard for me because I love this. I love you guys. But like, if the idea is like, you're not going to be able to give it over in a way that those other neshamas are going to be lit, even if it's an intellectually like, wow, that's something interesting to think about. So pick something that speaks to you, and at the same time, know that sometimes some of us are like absolutely fascinated in 14th century Cruel, and it's possible that nobody else in the room is absolutely fascinated by 14th century handwork, right? So that could be theoretically, right? So it's got to be something that you're enthusiastic and passionate about, and at the same time make sure that there, you know, people in your audience could at least theoretically be interested in that topic. And the fourth thing, which is really what I mentioned already before when I spoke about the audience, is think about what background knowledge do I need to know in order to does my audience need to know in order to understand the point I'm going to make. And for many of you, the way you can test this is think about this. Would I have understood this Dvar Torah 3 years ago? Would I have understood this Dvar Torah 6 months ago? Are there people in my audience who are where I was 6 months ago or 3 years ago, right? Or not, right? That's a possible. Just sort of like check yourself. What background knowledge is necessary to understand? Do you have enough time to say it over in the manner in which I suggested before, which is just to kind of sneak it in there so it's like it's a reminder that people already know it without it being an insult to them or too boring, and at the same time, you're giving the necessary background information for the people who might not have it, who won't be able to get the greatest benefit out of your Dvar Torah without it. Okay, so all of this is before you actually have anything to say. Okay. And if I can't download it from H.com, how am I supposed to find anything to say? Okay, so preparation. Before I get to first-hand, second-hand, what is your goal? To say a nice little inspiring word on the Parsha that's also going to say something nice about the Kala. Okay, that's my goal, right? Or my goal might be, you know, in a different. I'm speaking to a group of single women who are living in Harnof, who are like working and living in Harnof, and da 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 da. So it's going to be an interesting idea that we haven't heard ad nauseum. It's going to tell us about how wonderful our life's challenges are. It's going to make us throw up, but at the same time, it's going to give me chizik about my life situation. Right? In other words, what are you trying to accomplish? Now, the bottom line has got to be, I'm trying to share Torah, right? But there's kind of a lot of that, right? So you want to sort of fine focus what your goal is before you start. Okay, so under preparation, first-hand, second-hand. First-hand sources versus prepared anthologies. So first-hand sources, like Tanakh and Mefarshim, that's the first-hand source. Tanakh, Mefarshim, Midrashim. Make sure you understand what you're reading. I have heard some Divrei Torah in which very, very well-meaning people, very, very well-meaning people, I mean, it's happened to me enough times when I completely misread a chazal and didn't understand what Rashi was saying or something like that, and had I made a Dvar Torah out of it, I would have made a blithering idiot out of myself, a complete fool. Luckily for me at the time, like, somebody stopped me, some tutor said, no, that's not what that means. Right? So, it's wonderful to try to, again, we don't want to be those people who say Rambam says this, Rambam says that, Or HaChaim says this, and Smyrna says that, but I think. But we can say, oh, this is what it says, and I think this is what he means, or I think we could also learn from this. That's great. That's great. Make sure that you're translating it correctly. Make sure you understand the references. If you're looking at that at primary sources, and I sort of recommend that you do, I strongly recommend that when there are proof texts, drink more, T-E-X-T-S, there are proof texts that are brought, you look them up in context, right? Like I said, oh, this word, you know, what would be an example? Sarah sees Yishmael mitzachek, right? And then Rashi brings three examples of mitzachek meaning three different things. Well, look it up, you know, like, and see what the story just said. Oh, this means this. But how do you know? You know, how do you know what it means? So look it up, see it in context. The number of times I have gotten an idea because when Rashi quotes a midrash, I looked up the midrash, I saw another thing that Rashi didn't quote because it wasn't pshat, and I got a whole other understanding of what was going on. So when you have the skills, and you will, those of you who don't yet, you will. I believe in you. You will. When you have the skills to look at original sources, look at the source, look at the source of the source, look at the source of the source and its original thing, and you'll see the Siyata Dishmaya. Because originally, what is she talking about? Oh, just stop it. This is never going to happen. Let me tell you something. When you were in utero, you didn't even need a passport then. I've been in utero. We've all been in utero. It's a nice place, but it's a little bit crowded. Like, you learned a lot of Torah. All the Torah that there was to learn, the Malach was teaching us. Okay, on the way out, we got that little, you know. Okay, some of us got hit a bit harder than others. Okay? Right? It's there. Did you ever have the experience where you open something up and you're just like, yeah! That's going back to that Malach time. You knew this. You had this. So, obviously, you want to check yourself and you want to check with someone who knows a little bit more, but if you're just starting out. But, like, trust that little whispering voice that says, I think this could mean something. Now, the flip side of this is, if you have a very strong agenda, I would like to prove that. Blah, 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 blah. Somebody once told me that she was trying to make a decision about a certain area in halacha, that there are certain communities within the Orthodox world that are a little bit lax about this area of halacha, let's put it this way. Okay, and she was trying to make a decision for herself what was the right thing. She was extremely intelligent, extremely intellectually honest, well-educated, and she wanted to decide for herself what was really the deal. Were these people just being fanatics? Were these people just being lax? Is it something in between? So she went to a place where these people were, and she said she found a bunch of people who, through their choices, were very obviously already had chosen option A, right? Sitting around with the books open, looking for proofs to prove that option A was correct. Right? That's called shooting the arrow and drawing the bullseye. Okay, so make sure when you're when you're looking at original sources, when you're looking at primary sources, it's okay to say, I'd like to find something that's going to teach us about Emunah and Bitachon. That's great. But make sure that you're not so stuck in what you want to say that you're going to misread or kvetch what the primary source says. Okay. That's the first hand. Second hand pieces will include anthologies, and there's amazing anthologies out there. Of course, you're always taking the risk that the people in your audience read the same anthology that you have, but if it's not online, so you might be safe. Maybe that's not true. What about taking something like, you know, this piece from Sisei Chaim, this piece from Rav Dessler, this piece from here, this piece from there. So that's a piece that was put together by a Gadol B'Torah who knows his stuff. You don't have to worry if it's like he's misunderstanding the Chazal. That's great. In other words, you can take that. All of us do that. I mean, I certainly do that when, you know, when we go to America, Rebbe Sinpavlov and the other staff members, and we go to America very often, I'll like start thinking about something, and I'll look at a piece that was written by a gadol, and I'll look at the stuff that he quotes, and I'll take that from here, and I'll take that from there, and I put this together and put that, and then it's fine to take a piece like that, to take a piece of a piece. You know, to take a piece of a piece, because again, if we're talking about a short Dvar Torah, you don't want one of these 20-page things. But make sure that it stands on its own. Sometimes these things are built like, you know, this and then this and then this and then this and then this. Sometimes you can take a point out of a bigger piece. You know, you can take a point that kuntras achesed. We know, like Rav Dessler says, that there is, you know, there's givers and takers, and giving can be giving and taking can be taking. Like, you know, you could take that general idea out of there and then go someplace else with it, and then go someplace with it. Just make sure it stands on its own for a person who doesn't already know where you're going. You hear what I'm saying? Yeah.
How and when do you know you can add your own reading or perspective?
I mean, I would say when you start off, you should like show it to somebody. It's like, I had this idea. What do you think? Right? Okay, but again, this is like, you know, this is the ego thing, and it's hard for all of us, but it's like, I have this idea. Isn't it a great idea? As opposed to, I have this idea. What do you think? My husband is a complete tzaddik. Like, his greatest joy is when he comes up with some, like, unbelievable chiddush, and then he finds it somewhere else. Like, I would be annoyed. Like, you know, I thought it was such a great idea. You know, and he's like, he comes with this brilliant thing, and then, like, he finds it in the sefer, and he's like, yeah, it's true. You know, like, no, there's that sort of humility that I sorely lack, but he has it. We balance each other out beautifully. I make enough noise for both of us. Right. So I think that's the idea. In other words, if you can have the modesty, the intellectual honesty to say, like, is this true? And actually, my husband says it. I think he found it someplace else afterwards and was very happy. The vort on Eliezer comes and tells the whole story over. We have a whole story in the Torah about Eliezer. And I know you know this background story, right? Especially those of you learning this in Chumash now. Okay. Eliezer goes, Avram says, I'm too old. You got to go get a wife for Yitzchak. He goes to get a wife for Yitzchak. And the Torah is like, really goes on and on in detail about this whole experience and what happens. And then he goes back and he tells the whole story again. Tell the whole story again. So Rashi's like, hello? You know, like, there's like four words to tell us about keeping Shabbos. You know, like... It's like paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs, and Chazal tell us there that Yofes Sicha San Shel Avdei Avos Mitoras San Shel Banav, the Sicha, the speech of the servants of our forefathers is more beautiful, more pleasing in the eyes of a Kodesh Baruch Hu than the Torah of their sons. It's like, what does that mean? So my husband says is that Sicha. Speech is also tefillah. Tefillah has to come from a place of anava. Tefillah has to come from a place of anava, because when you're saying is, I am actually not the be-all and end-all, this is a deocentric world, a world, a God-centered world, not a me-centered world. I might actually not always be able to do everything, and I might actually not know everything, and I might not always be right, right? And there's a, you know, a higher authority. We answer to the higher, who, to that old Hebrew national ads, they still run those? We answer to a higher authority. Okay, they're trade now, but anyway, we answer to a higher authority. So Rabbi Taven explains the ability, and Eliezer was a Canaanite, the root of the word Kana'an is hachna, which is subservience. The ability to make yourself subservient is beautiful in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Beautiful, more beautiful than Torah. Isn't Torah like the most important thing? But it says Torah San Shel Banav. It's like, I'm his kid. This is my pshat, right? When the Torah is my pshat, you know, when there's an ego piece there, so that's when the humility of a servant is greater than the Torah of the sons. Having said that, are we meant to try to be mechadesh? To try to bring new ideas or clarify new understandings? Absolutely. You know, we want to make sure we're kind of hashgafically correct, so in the beginning you might want to check things with people. But if you have an idea, like, your Torah there's a gadol hador, several gadolei hador. Let's say, you know, take Rav Chaim and Rabbi David Abu Chatzera. Okay, let's okay. So they're gadolei Torah, but every piece of Torah that you work on and that you bring into the world is also becomes part of his Torah. So yes, absolutely. Like try to strive and understand. Okay, so that's pretty much with preparation. We're going to talk about next. We're going to talk about structure and delivery. So do we have any questions so far on the audience, the technical, choosing a topic, first-hand versus second-hand sources? Yeah.
I just want to see if you could repeat the Chazal
with
Eliezer, the greatest.
Yeah, it's Rashi. Yeah, 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 yes, yes. But I mean, Rashi quotes Chazal, right? Yafe sichasan shel abdei avos, mitorasan shel b'nei bano, or shel bano. It's don't do this in the middle of the thing, but in the place where Eliezer tells the story over again, so the Rashi's there. I don't remember exactly where it's like a doll and some and something. I don't remember. Okay. So there are lots and lots of beautiful anthologies of Balei Mussar that all of us here use often to find sources. You can certainly use any and all of those for sources, in addition to, you know, there's Lekach Tov and Lekach Tov, which is thinner volumes. Yeah, no, whatever the other one I'm not going to tell you about, because it's like 25 volumes and they're all this thick, so you probably don't want that. In addition to, if you've come across pieces during your learning, with a teacher, and you can go over and say, gee, like, does he have any other svarim? Can I look at them? I really like the way that his Torah develops. I'd like to get an idea that goes kind of along that mode of thinking. Okay. Structure. Okay. So again, know where you are going when you start talking. I have to say, having said that, some of the like most interesting ideas I've ended up coming up with were extemporaneous, but. But they usually were at like family gatherings where it was just like me and my kids and everyone was getting all emotional because like Mikasuda Soda every year because of my son when he was born wasn't breathing and now he's alive, Baruch Hashem, and da 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 da. So I would just like, you know, speak off the cuff. But you know, you could do that in front of your kids, but you know, like that's, I mean, yeah, grandchildren and whatever. And they were eating ice cream, so they didn't really care. It's like, Safka bought chocolate syrup. Okay, Lesukis. Okay. Introduction. Okay, so know where you're going. So introduction is going to be, background, but again, as we said, limited, you know, don't like on and on and on and on and on and on and on, right? But enough necessary background so that the question will be seen as a question. So that under introduction is background, and B is posing the question or the idea. And that we have not gotten to resolution yet, so hold on, right? So you want to give enough background information so the question is going to, if it's not intuitive, ideally, as educators, those of you who want to be or are already, you want your students to come up with the question themselves, right? Ideally, that's the case. So you would develop the background in such a way so that the question would start to become clear, like, oh, now, wait a minute. Hey, that's a contradiction, as opposed to saying A and Q aren't the same. Oh, A and Q aren't the same. You say A, Q, Q, Q. Hey, wait a minute. A can't be Q. Good. Okay, right? Okay. So, okay. So even in a case where it's a Dvar Torah and you don't necessarily have an interactive audience, right? And in your average Dvar Torah, you don't have an interactive audience, which is to the shiurim that our Rev gives on Shabbos. Like, everyone yells at him in the middle, and he's like, I knew you were going to ask that question, and here's the answer. But it's like a shul full of Talmidei Chachamim. But anyway, your average Dvar Torah, you don't have an interactive audience, but you have to realize that in their minds, you want them to be interactive with you in their minds, even if they're not standing up and saying. So you want them to hear the question. Like, you want it to sort of be, like, forming slowly, like ethereally, in their minds. You lead them to it, and then you present the question, the dilemma, like, oh, yeah, right? Right? That, you know, ideally, that's what you'd like to do. So the next step after the introduction, which would have the background and the presentation of the question or the idea or the dilemma, is developing the question. So how do you develop the question? You bring examples, right, of how the question is a question, for example. How is that question a question? Like, and we see this in a similar place, blah, 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 blah. When you show this, see this in a similar place, again, be cognizant of who your audience is. Are the examples that I'm giving going to be examples that are going to resonate with them? Are they familiar enough with this that it's not just going to be another piece of information that I don't know? On the one hand. On the other hand, and here it doesn't matter how familiar it is, the more familiar the better. You know, we actually see a similar dilemma, a similar question, similar language, similar blah, blah, blah somewhere else. People like to feel like, oh yeah, wow, look at that, it's something I know, you know, like that. So you want, as you develop the question, you want to bring examples that are familiar to your audience to help illustrate the deeper level of the question. In addition to that, you want to bring some illustrative stories. Now, you know, here's a question of style. Some people bring a lot of stories. You know, too many stories, you're going to lose your audience. But no stories at all is usually going to be a little bit dry. A short, quick story is always, I'm trying to remember now, someone just told me a really funny one the other day, but whatever it was. You know, that's like, and you hear this all the time in Divrei Torah at Shevar Brachas. Somebody says like a pasuk and like a Rashi, and then they go, you know, and then they, you know, then they tell some funny story which makes everybody laugh, and they go back to explaining the Rashi, connecting it to the story, connecting it to the chasen or the kala, and then it's like, really? And you think about it, and this is like a perfect Divrei Torah. Because really, you had one short idea. But that idea is going to stick with your audience because you developed it nicely. It wasn't an intellectual insult to your audience. You illustrated it, and if the story is humorous, either humorous on the one hand or like very powerful, like, whoa, that's amazing kind of story on the other hand, right? That the story will stick. Now, let me say, my husband says, like, how was work? I said, I know they got my jokes. I'm just wondering if they understand. If I told them anything besides my jokes, I would get it if I would explain it, but I don't remember if I explained anything. But like, I hope they, I hope I explained it. I don't know, but I know like they like my jokes. But the point is that Chazal tells us thousands of years ago in the Gemara that we should use humor in education, and like, you know, guess what science discovered like 15 years ago? You know, that people actually remember things better when they're look at that! Gosh. They also discovered that the family stays more cohesive when there's one day a week when everybody's together. You know how many thousands of dollars they spent doing that study? They also discovered that marriages retain the newness in the intimate relationships when there's certain predetermined times when the... I'm telling you! Brilliant! Okay, it's like, could have saved you some money. Right? And you'd have those jacuzzis in the dorm. Yeah. So one or two stories to illustrate the point that you're making, like I just did, okay? And familiar examples that develop the question, the idea, the dilemma that you're trying to say. Okay? And then you want to get to resolution. Yes, Malka. Okay, does somebody want to say something from something they heard recently in class where something was presented and then you realize that it was like more of a problem? So in level 3, we say this a lot. You know, there's, kol malachta, right? Kol malachtecha, right? So we saw a verse that said that, on the seventh day, all of your work shall be finished. So what happened? Okay, on the seventh day, all of your work shall be finished. We know this line, it's in Kiddush, everybody says it. And they said, no, wait a minute. Are we doing work on the seventh day? We're not doing work on the seventh day. Yeah, we're not doing work on the seventh day. So this is actually a question. Okay, and then we can discuss like what that is and what's work and what's the seventh day. And then what does it mean to do all of your work? Oh, so it means that it's as if that when you got to the sixth day, so you just like stop all your work, you get your sixth day, you stop all the work, and how did you do all the work? nobody ever does all the work. Oh, so all the work, that means it's if, it's to be stopped in all the work. In other words, okay, so I just did this very quickly, I didn't do it well, but the point is you take something that's familiar, ask a question on it, develop the question, go deeper, show that there's actually a question on it, and then say, well, gee, is menucha malacha? Is menucha not malacha? Is it a creative thing? Is it not a creative thing? To just sort of like hash it out a little bit. And then go back to, so if our initial question is this, so what is this menucha that was created on the seventh day, if nothing was created on the seventh day, and how is it that all the malacha was done on the seventh day, and you want to, you know, open this up in a, you know, in a sort of go deeper into the question. And again, a good way to do that is to recognize that there are some things that we all know so well that we don't actually think about the words, right? Like some of the most interesting thoughts that I was zoche to have and then to find somebody says something about it have been because I stopped to think about something that I knew well and said, oh, but wait a minute. Like, I know it says it this way. Why does it say it this way? But like, don't be afraid to ask yourself a question. Now, sometimes the answer is because that's biblical grammar. And be okay with that. And again, don't try to like force something deep and mystical into, you know, we've all done this, like, oh, I spelled it wrong. That's why it doesn't really mean that. Never mind. No. Okay, resolution. Okay, so resolution, resolution is going to be to repeat the question in a deeper, more developed manner with a short illustration of what the question really is, and then present your resolution. So how could this be this? If it's that, how could that be that? If it's this, how can this mean this? And so it seems like what Rashi is telling us is blah, 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 and we can learn from that. That's the next step. That's the summary. The summary is your take-home message. They may or may not remember everything you're going to say. You want them to go home with, I mean, I hate to say soundbite because that's kind of cheap sounding, but you want them to go home with the take-home message. So you repeat the question with illustration, you explain the resolution, and then you solidify the take-home message that you got from the resolution. Leave them with an idea. Leave them with a quest, the question, resolution, message. So we asked how a person can do all the malacha. We realize that a person can't do ever all the malacha. It must mean that what a person is meant to do when it comes time for Shabbos, to shut down in a way so completely that it's as if that same sense of, oh, I got it all done, I don't have to worry about this anymore, even if it's not all done, that's the way I should feel going into Shabbos, so that I'm not thinking about worldly things, and then I'll be able to appreciate and to really feel the beauty of Shabbos and have that closer to Hashem and be with Hashem on his day, da 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 da. And that's your take-home message. So you have the question, the resolution, and the message. Okay. Number five, where I sit, that's the summary. So number five is what I call the party favor. That's the party favor. Now, the party favor, what's a party favor? Is when you leave a party and they give you something, right? And it reminds you of the whole party. So the party favor is the question, the resolution, and the message wrapped up neatly. So they're not going to repeat the whole 10-minute Dvar Torah that you said, but they'll be able to see, oh, wow, I heard this amazing Dvar Torah at the Shabbos Kala, Yael Shabbos Kala, and she asked this question, and she really developed it, da-da-da-da-da, and she resolved it like this, and the, really the take-home message was very powerful, that we should all be wonderful and stay in Shaarim forever. Right? Okay. Okay. So, very quickly, talking about being careful about time. Some quick hints about delivery. I have 5 minutes. Yeah. Some quick hints about delivery. The difference between a Dvar Torah that is written out word for word and a Dvar Torah that's written out with notes is Shamayim Va'aretz. If you can get away with reading from notes, I mean, look, if you can get away with having it all in your head, that's wonderful. It feels more real, right? The audience feels more connected to you than if you're, it says in the da 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 da. However, if you've got a good enough Dvar Torah and you're enthusiastic enough about it And instead of writing out, like, I would say, if you're going to have to write it all out, because that's just the way you work, at least, like, don't write out the whole story, right? Tell them the story about Yankee and Shmero, you know? So at least there's part of it where you're just talking. If you need to write it out word for word, if you can use bullet points, that's better. If you can just kind of jot yourself down a few notes, that's even better. When you're writing an article, every word exactly this and this and this, it has to go over and over and over. But nobody's like sitting there and rewinding, especially on Shabbos, the Dvar Torah to hear exactly the words. The idea is important. Okay. If you need to, even if you need to read from a written paper, use notes, make sure you familiarize yourself with what you're reading. Look up and look around as much as you can without, like, losing your place. You know, if you have to put your finger down, like, look up and look around so that you're engaging your audience. Remember that there's a difference between written speech, between the written word and words that are written to be read. Speech is not the same as the written word. It doesn't sound the same. So if you could be writing a beautiful Dvar Torah, say it at yourself in the mirror to hear if it sounds like good spoken.
Not in the bathroom.
What?
Not in the bathroom.
Not in the bathroom. Thank you, Panina. Okay. So I'd say familiarize, look up and look around, write for speech, not for the written word, and test it on a friend or a mirror. That's if you're working off of a written script. If you're working off of notes, so really most of this applies, right? Familiarize yourself with it, look up and look around, and test it on a friend. The next two things are I would call them tools beyond words. Tools beyond words are body language and your voice. When you say a story like this, and then, right? You can grab your audience, right? Now, again, it's not to fool people or to trick people. I want to share the Torah. I love this. I want them to be as inspired and excited by this idea as I am. Use the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. Use your body language. Use your voice. Inflections up and down. We know, like, everybody left. Shir, Mizmar, Lassa, Elohim, Adonai, Lassa. If you want to say the Shir, Mizmar, Lassa, Elohim, right? You want to use it, okay? Now, because when you're dominating. Use your body language, use your voice. You should all be zoche to have lots of chidushei Torah, to share your Torah with many people, and to inspire many people with many divrei Torah ad me'av esri.